Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Colin. We've got obviously a lot of things we need to fix. There's a mountain of stuff to do, but the good news is it's all doable, but it's how we do it. And really what I'd like to take us through is introduce you to the world of design and how you might be part of it, how you might take those first steps to engaging with design and bringing it home to the world that you work in, to improve the end result, which is health outcomes. So I'm going to start off with the first point, really. So that's that. If you just take this away, that's really my job done. And this is why I'm passionate about design. It's not because I'm a frustrated designer. It's because I'm a passionate clinician. And what I want to do is improve health outcomes. And truly, this is one way of doing it. Your consulting room absolutely is the other. And all the other stuff you do is critical. But without putting this into your jigsaw, we're seriously missing a trick. How can I say this? Well, there is a whole body of evidence to support this. The stuff that you always have to show and tell, where's the evidence base? Apart from you, at a gut level, really knowing this to be true, there is a whole wealth of data out there. All the stuff that you need, trials, rigorous research. I'm going to give you a sample of some of these just very briefly. So way back when, the Design Council did something called the RED Project. You can still find the literature on their website. Do go and have a look at it. But basically, this was addressing diabetes, management of diabetes in Bolton, and also dealing with aging in another community. I forget the location. Kent, absolutely, yeah. And what they found through the intelligent use of design, through co-designing solutions to managing diabetes and the issues of social isolation, was improved engagement, improved outcomes, albeit for a very small group within the scope of that project. But the data was there. Let me give you another example. The NPSA did something called the Clean Your Hands campaign. This is more for the acute sector. But primarily they found that effective design reduced MRSA and C. diff infection rates by 50%. So these are hard outcomes. Once more, okay, there's the Design Council's work on reducing aggression and violence in A&E. Simple tools, wayfinding, managing the waiting environment that was described by Colin, reduced aggression in A&E, which has a knock-on effect for the staff, and job satisfaction touches on those points. If you want to look more into this, do go to the Center for Health Design, which is US-based, but there was a body of evidence collated by NHS Estates, which I think is now on the DH website. As many studies as you want to look at, showing hard outcomes, the effect of design improving hard outcomes. I want to take a step back then, because design is a big word. It means a lot of things. It's not just the built environment. So there are a number of other aspects to it. A lot of people think about products. When you think of design, you think, yes, you think of the Apple. You think of sexy gizmos. You think of a pretty-looking building. But there is more to it. There is urban design. So what about the landscape that you commute through, for example? That's designed. What about town centres? There's someone here from town planning, I think. All of that doesn't just happen. It's design. It's a discipline of design. I'm going to talk about how these relate to you as healthcare professionals in a moment. The built environment column's already touched on, so I'm not going to spend too much time there. You understand the word. And then there is this whole mass of service design, which I'm going to talk a bit more about, and where you could conceivably and very realistically get involved, and that's potentially where that could influence your practice. So the built environment is not just about a consulting room in primary care. There are impacts on health outcomes through a range of healthcare settings. The consulting room, of course, that's an important area. Someone mentioned previously the work of Roger Naber in the consulting, in the method of the consultation. But you might need to know that his consulting room had no desk. I trained with him, and this was back in the late 80s. It had a sofa and a lap tray. It had a Buddha in the corner. It was completely ahead of its time, but it was... It's what started me on the journey, because whenever I was in that consulting room, somehow my consultations felt different. And I went on to explore this and did a master's in primary care, where my dissertation explored the impact of the consulting room on the consultation. And I can share that with any of you at some point. But bear in mind that your consulting room is your body language. It conveys a message. You might not think it does, but if you go into a complete tip of a room, that speaks volumes. Just think about it. A&E design, I've touched on a moment ago. One of the important pieces of research coming out from the Institute for Health Improvement from the US is the impact of single-bedded wards. One of the most important simple things to reduce infection rates. And that has found its way home to the UK now, and there are changes afoot, but that it has a powerful impact on infection rates and health outcomes. And then, of course, some of you may be aware of Maggie Centres and their place in cancer and end-of-life care. And you've got to ask yourself why they are there, what is behind that, and why they make a difference. And behind it is design, but the end point is patient experience, improved health outcomes, reduced medication for pain control, all of those. I'm not going to get into that detail now, I haven't got time, but if you need any of the research to back up these statements, please come and talk to me. I don't know if you can see those two things, the arts and landscaping. And I totally agree with Colm's point on the arts. There is no point putting a picture up on a wall. It's got to be a holistic part of the environmental design. And it does not include just painted arts. It includes performing arts, music. All of these impact on health outcomes. Again, think about the arrival of music in operating theatres. Why is that there? And there is an evidence base around performance and clinical outcomes there. Landscaping, the approach to a health center, as Colin mentioned, is important. But what about using landscaping and gardening as a therapy? And you may be interested to know that that is in a couple of practices. Again, it's small, but there is a practice in Surrey that prescribes therapeutic gardening. Why not? And there is a spinal injuries unit that has a sensory garden for rehab of spinal patients so that they can touch and feel and smell. And it's powerfully used in dementia. So these are health outcomes I'm talking about, not just a pretty garden. There's a purpose, there's a function, and it's designed. Urban design, we all know, you should do anyway, about the impact of the Marmot report. It's stuff that we've known about all along, that the social determinants of health are really powerful, and these are designed. So if I did a piece of work working in Kingston, where a deprived inner city, a deprived pocket of this fairly leafy suburbia, was essentially a food desert. There was nothing for these people to get healthy food. And the crime was rife. So there was no point for me as a GP in a practice nearby saying, you need to go and take regular walks and get some healthy food onto your plate, because they were too scared to go out to take healthy, take a walk, and there was nowhere to go and get the food. So again, it comes back to the point, urban design can powerfully influence what arrives in your consulting room and the practical implementation of the advice that you're giving them. There is no point saying that stuff, it's just wasted, without addressing these. And you need to be part of the conversations that are happening as spaces and places are being designed. Otherwise, it's too late. There is then this bigger point that I've touched on earlier about design thinking. Colum's mentioned it, others have mentioned it. Social design, what is it? It's a set of tools, if you like, which are applied to social issues, social being in its broadest context. Social includes health, well-being. So it's using design tools to work with people to address social issues, including health. That's my simple definition. I'm sure there are better ones, but the words keep changing, but that's what it is. And within this umbrella, there are a whole range of tools. Now, these are not massively complicated. You can grasp them, but the delivery is a skill, and I'm going to come back to that in a second. The one that I'd like to draw attention to is rapid prototyping, whereby you can quickly try something without going through a 3-year randomized control trial. This is a step that comes before you even get to a pilot. You can do this on a desk in an afternoon. And I have real examples of this on a personal level. I worked with a group of older people in Devon. This was a piece of work funded by NHS Devon to address social isolation in older people in a rural community. We got some older people together and we used some very simple visual tools, some of which are up on the screen, to create a prototype. We spent one afternoon. At the end of that afternoon, we had a working prototype with all the details. Who's going to do it? How's it going to get paid for? What's going to happen tomorrow? We actually delivered it. We ran it for 4 weeks. We brought it back, and we said, okay, how's it going? Is it working? What's wrong? Let's fix it. This was on a £2,000 budget. 4 weeks later, we had the next iteration, which was co-designed with the users. That's really the heart of this. It's a shift that many of us, including myself, have to make, that the solutions are not necessarily in your head as the healthcare professional. And you need to let go and engage with the patients and the users because they have the answers more often than not. So we worked with them. We came up with a second prototype. It's now going into its third prototype. It's being scaled up. It's being expanded to younger people. And it is remarkably low cost. We're now tagging on a more robust evaluation of outcome and impact. And the other point highlighted in red is the use of visual tools to elaborate on early ideas. And that is something I can't emphasize enough. Writing lengthy documents has a different outcome and effect compared to using visual thinking, which is much more creative and taps into a part of the brain that thinks differently and works differently. And so the end point is different. This is, for example, a service blueprint. As you can see, don't go to the detail, it just tracks every step of the process. And very often when early ideas come to me, for example, when I was working at an organization called the Young Foundation, the detail was missing. So you have a great idea, but who's going to do that? They haven't thought about that. And the service blueprint really provides a tool to get down to the nitty-gritty, the sustainability issue, which many people just assume is going to happen. Can't do that. This is a storybook. It's like a cartoon, yes, and this is a story. But by drawing out every single step of the journey, things crop out of that narrative as you create it that wouldn't have come about without going through that sequence of events. So it's not high-tech. It's cheap. It's a Sharpie pen and a piece of paper. But the skill involved in bringing this together is a skill that is within the domain of designers, but certainly not within without your domain to understand the value and to contribute to it. And this is a story world. So we use this to create, to put yourself as the developer, the innovator, into the world of the person that you're innovating for. So often, we forget about that. We don't think about the patient or the person who's going to use this tool or this service. And this forces you to actually become that person. It's really straight, simple stuff. But if it doesn't happen, you find yourself 6 months down the line thinking, oh yeah, why didn't we think about that? Because patients can't use that gizmo. Because you didn't ask them, because you didn't think about them and engage with them. So I'm down to my last couple of slides now. This is the key point. It is not difficult. This is not something that you can't engage with or understand. These are things that you intuitively know and can work with. But, and it's a big but, there really is a but here. You can't do it in a Mickey Mouse kind of way. You can't do a sort of DIY thing and hope it holds together. You do need to engage with the skill that designers, particularly social designers, healthcare designers, bring to this field. So the expertise that Column and Design Council bring to the table are things that you can connect with, and if you don't do that, you will end up with a little bit of a mess. So that's the message. You can understand this, you can pick this up very quickly, but like anything, if you want to do something well and properly, you need to work with the relevant expertise. This is where we need to go. We do need to, as healthcare professionals, we need to understand design. We absolutely have to, if we are in the business of improving health outcomes. To me, it's a direct connection. We cannot just not do this. You, as clinical commissioners, can apply some of these tools to thinking when you are faced with new commissioning decisions. What about, have we done some design work here? Have we actually spoken to the patients? Have we looked at the sustainability of this proposal that's come to us? Where's their service blueprint? What's it going to look like in my world or the patient's world? Let's do a story world. Okay, so that's how I see these things happening. And by working with patients, there's a whole opportunity of improved patient engagement, which has been tokenistic at best for many practices, and I speak from my own experience. This provides you some real tools, some real meaty stuff to join and work together on something. So we absolutely have to engage with it. I hope this has given you a sense of what the world of design is more broadly, that it's not something that is out there as a Cinderella discipline and something that's sweet and cute, that it's core to what you do, and that you can engage with it and absolutely have to. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.